The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Ross, Judge Jessen, Judge Clary, Honorable Kevin G. Ross presiding.
Good morning and welcome to the Court of Appeals for this November 17, 2021 oral argument. This is our second argument for today. The matter is State of Minnesota versus Craven. Counsel, even though we are appearing by Zoom and we can see each other and see each other's names, we're only making an audio recording of the proceeding, so please do state your name as you commence each leg of your argument. If there's any glitchy issues, so far we've gone pretty smoothly. If there's any technological issues where you can't see or hear any member of the court or opposing counsel, somehow let us know and we'll try to pause the proceedings and catch up to the, let the technology catch up to us or do what we have to do. Each side will have 15 minutes to present your argument with an additional 5 minutes to appellant's counsel or rebuttal if you'd like to use it. And with that, counsel for appellant, whenever you're ready to proceed, you may.
Thank you. Good morning, and may it please this court. I'm Andrew Nelson. I'm an assistant state public defender, and I represent the appellant in this case, Mr. Craven. Today, I'd like to focus this court's attention on the second argument raised in appellant's brief, which is that the district court's order revoking Mr. Craven's probation and executing his 255-month sentence must be reversed because the district court failed to make a finding on any of the Austin sub-factors. Probation cannot be revoked merely because a violation has been proven. Instead, Austin requires courts to make several specific findings with support in the record. In Austin, the Supreme Court prospectively directed courts to refer to three factors or conduct a three-step analysis every time it chooses to revoke a defendant's probation. But this court is aware of those three Austin factors, so I won't go through them one by one. But the third Austin factor does require district courts to find that the need for confinement outweighs the policies favoring probation. Now, Austin understood that mere recitation of that third factor was insufficient. Judge Ross, you have a question?
I may in a bit.
So Austin recognized that mere recitation of that third Austin factor was not sufficient. Instead, Austin directed courts to refer to three sub-factors in considering the third Austin factor. Those three sub-factors are what are at issue in Mr. Craven's appeal. Those three sub-factors require, first, that the confinement is necessary to protect the public. Second, that the offender is in need of correctional treatment that can best be provided in prison. Or third, that it would unduly depreciate the severity of the violations if probation were not revoked.
So Mr. Nelson, are we not allowed on appeal to infer findings that are not expressed but necessarily implied in the district court's explanation as to why the court is revoking probation?
Your Honor, when we're dealing with probation revocation, I think Austin and Motland are very clear that I'll refer specifically to Motland. In Motland, the Supreme Court held that it's not this court's job to scour the record to see if sufficient evidence supports revocation. When it comes to the Austin factors, when it comes to the Austin sub-factors, specific findings by the court are required. This court cannot just infer.
Mr. Nelson, can I just follow up on Judge Ross's question? Would you agree, though, that we can look at the district court, what the district court said when it denied your client's motion for a dispositional departure? You know, and consider whether those meet the Austin factor.
So, Your Honor, I would agree that those are, or the judge's comments dealing with the dispositional departure, I'm not going to say this court can't consider that when evaluating the first argument, whether the court abused its discretion. But when we're talking about Mr. Craven's second argument, which is that the court failed to make specific findings, the court's statements about Mr. Craven's record on probation when discussing the dispo departure wouldn't satisfy those specific findings. But in addressing the abuse of discretion argument, this court can consider those things. And to follow up on Judge Jessen's question here, I think it is important to point out that there is a very big difference between Mr. Craven's first argument and his second argument. Mr. Craven's first argument before this court is that the court abused its discretion by revoking his probation. Essentially, in that argument, Mr. Craven is arguing that the district court's decision to revoke his probation was contrary to the facts and the logic in the record, that there were treatment options available, there were intermediate sanctions available, and the district court made the wrong decision. Mr. Craven's second argument is an interpretation of Austin and whether Austin requires district courts to analyze both the three Austin factors and at least one Austin subfactor. After briefing from the parties, that specific issue has been narrowed a little bit. The parties agree on three things here. First, the parties agree that the district court here did make all three required Austin findings. The court found violation on seven violations. The court found that those violations were intentional and inexcusable. And the court said that the need for confinement outweighed the policy's favor on probation. Second, the parties agree that based on appellant's interpretation of the case law, courts are required to make a finding on at least one subfactor before revoking probation. And third, the parties agree that that did not occur here. The main issue on the second argument for this court's consideration is whether this court can use the sufficient evidence exception and whether this court can essentially re-review the record, re-review Mr. Craven's record on probation, re-review the violations, and determine if one of these three subfactors is satisfied. Because the sufficient evidence exception cannot be reconciled with Austin, and because Motlin's expressly overruled that exception, I would ask this court not to do so here.
All right, counsel, let's focus on the subfactor that it seems to me that we need to focus on, which is the need for confinement to protect the public. I mean, I think a review of the record, both in terms of the dispositional departure discussion and the PV itself, would indicate that the court went into some detail as to the court's viewpoint as to Mr. Craven's danger to the public. The judge talks about the probation record being horrible, that the traumatic brain injury did not correlate to the current offense, that there's other treatment programs, but he's been through a number of treatment programs. In fact, he said his record on probation is horrible and that the number of treatment programs he'd been on and the resources that had been expended indicated that a lot of time had already been spent on him. It isn't clean. I don't think anybody here is going to argue it's clean, but this isn't the first district judge that didn't do it by the book. So the question becomes, isn't there enough in the record without scouring it to suggest that a subcategory has been met?
So, Your Honor, here's how I'll answer that question. If the district court here did make the finding that the need for that confinement was necessary to protect the public, which you've identified as the most applicable subfactor here. If the court made that finding after going through what it went through, I think we would have a hard argument to make that that finding was error. But the thing with this specific argument, with the Austin factors, with the Austin subfactors, is that the court is required to make a specific finding on that factor. So the court is required to say the magic words and explain why those magic words apply to this case. And the court maybe explained how these subfactors could be satisfied, but didn't identify any of these subfactors and didn't find that any of these subfactors were satisfied, which appellant argues is a requirement under Austin, under Motland, and under Cadu. I also want to point out that it is important to consider the fact that the court made most of its comments when discussing a dispositional departure. When the court specifically turned its attention to the probation revocation at issue, we have a paragraph where the court says the violations were intentional and the need for confinement outweighs the policy's favor in probation. And while I'm not telling this court that you can't consider the district court's comments with the dispositional departure, it is important to know that the standards for a dispo departure and for a probation revocation are so different, they're almost complete opposites. With a dispositional departure, it's the defendant's burden to prove that substantial and compelling reasons support him being placed on probation. Essentially, the defendant has to show that his case is an exceptional case. When we're talking about a probation revocation, it's the state's burden to show that probation revocation is necessary as a last resort because treatment has failed. And you'll see when you review the contested hearing transcript that, or my summary of it in my brief, or opposing counsel's summary of it, his brief, that both parties, defense and the state, separated their arguments based on the dispositional departure and based on the probation revocation. In both cases, both parties' arguments were pretty equal in amount of time spent. And here the district court focused most of its attention, talking about Mr. Craven's probationary record, talking about his mental health treatment, talking about how he had failed previous chemical dependency treatment programs in the context of deciding whether or not he should be given a probationary sentence on this new felon in possession conviction. And so while this court may consider that, the district court here did not make a specific finding on any of those three Austin subfactors. Unless this court has any further questions, I will just concede the rest of my,
I do offer one question. I mean, assuming we disagree with you on whether, on the ultimate question of whether the court abuses discretion about the need for confinement and just focused on your argument about the findings, wouldn't the remedy be to remand this case to the district court rather than reverse it?
Yes, Your Honor. If you find that Mr. Craven's second argument is correct here and the district court failed to make specific findings on these subfactors, the remedy would be to remand for findings consistent with Austin. So I will just conclude by saying we ask this court, Mr. Craven respectfully asks this court to reverse and remand for findings consistent with Austin. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for respondent.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Michael Hagley. I'm an assistant St. Louis County attorney representing the state of Minnesota. I don't think I'm going to shock anyone when I say here that the record created by the district court was far from ideal. However, the record created by the district court is sufficient for this court to affirm the rulings. The record on the third Austin factor was adequate, and the record as a whole shows that the district court did not abuse its discretion in revoking appellant's probation.
Well, this argument is made by the state frequently in these cases, as Judge Clary has pointed out. These cases often show up to us not very well packaged. Why wouldn't we remand for the district court to paint by numbers, if for no other reason, to make sure that the courts are following the Supreme Court's directive to make express findings?
Well, and Your Honor, the state's position is that the record, both for the probation revocation itself and the record on the third Austin factor, is adequate.
Right, but aren't you essentially asking us to scour the record?
And no, Your Honor, the state's argument rests solely on the arguments made in the March 1st dispositional departure hearing and the statements made by the district court in the March 2nd dispositional hearing.
Also, just to follow up on what Judge Ross said a minute ago, which is that I think everyone here is recognizing that this judge and other judges have not completely gotten past the Austin factors to really understand what Motland says and what it requires. And, you know, the solution has been to, if not scour the record, at least review it. How would the district judges ever learn unless we remand these occasionally to remind them that they need to do more?
Well, and Your Honor, I think, and as appellant correctly pointed out, the sufficient evidence exception in State v. Thiel, which represented it, was expressly abrogated in State v. Motland. But I think an examination of the case law that underlaid that sufficient evidence exception is illustrative. For example, the court in Motland was dealing with the situation where the district court didn't make two of the required Austin findings, revoked probation, and then held a resentencing hearing. Even State v. Thiel, the district court didn't find two of the Austin factors, didn't make any articulation with respect to those findings. And the appellate court said, well, good enough. And so I think the pre-Motland sufficient evidence exception, what the appellate courts were dealing, or the Supreme Court in Motland was dealing with a trend wherein district courts were not making any of the required findings, were revoking probation based in some cases on four or five sentences worth of findings. And that's not the situation before the court here. The district court, and again, the state acknowledges that the record is muddled, But the district court did make findings on all three Austin factors, and did articulate his basis for the revocation. And the state takes a different approach to the combined dispositional departure and probation revocation hearing than appellant does, and that is that the findings that a court must make in a dispositional departure motion and a probation revocation are actually closely intertwined. To determine a departure motion, a district court must examine a defendant's amenability to probation, determine whether they're suited to treatment in an individual setting, whereas Motlin requires a district court to determine whether confinement is necessary for public safety, to determine whether the need for confinement outweighs those policies favoring probation, to determine if the probationer is in need of treatment best provided in confinement. And so when the district court, in considering the departure, spent a fairly long period of time discussing appellant's traumatic brain injury, stating you do have a TBI, you do have those issues that you've dealt with for a long time, acknowledging appellant's request for dual diagnosis, mental illness, chemical dependency program, stating you've requested this, but I see that you've already been through a mental illness, chemical dependency program. And finally stating there's been a considerable amount of resources, a considerable amount of time spent, and yet you've continued to violate your probation over and over and over again. And so in so doing, the district court is effectively making a finding on one of those Motlin subfactors, whether is the offender in need of treatment best provided in confinement? The district court explicitly considered whether or not treatment in the community, that dual diagnosis, mental illness, chemical dependency program, was the appropriate response to appellant's dispositional departure and probation revocation, and decided that based upon appellant's record on probation, that it was not appropriate. The district court also considered the appellant's record on probation, stating, your record on probation is horrible. I've looked at your track record, and I see that this isn't the first time you've had this type of offense that you're here for sentencing on. I would remind the court that the appellant's 2014 probation revocation he was not revoked on the file before the court here today, but he was revoked on a pre-existing felon in possession charge. And so the district court, again, did not explicitly consider any of the three Motlin factors, but he did make a finding on that third Austin factor and then proceeded to an evaluation. It admittedly muddled and wrapped up in that dispositional departure question of whether that need for confinement outweighed the policies favoring probation. But also direct the court to the Motlin court's articulated reasoning for requiring consideration of that third Austin factor, which is that, and I quote, "This process prevents courts from reflexively revoking probation when it is established that a defendant has violated a condition of probation." Looking at the March 1st hearing and the March 2nd hearing, the district court declined to issue a ruling at the conclusion of that March 1st disposition hearing. The district court stated that they were not comfortable moving to sentence and disposition today, and declined and cited the need to fully review documentation cited by the defense attorney shortly before that hearing. And in opening that March 2nd disposition hearing, the district court stated, "I really, really wanted to think about it. It's a very difficult case for me to make this decision on, and I needed some extra time. I wanted to hear the arguments. I wanted to digest them. And I wanted to think about it overnight, which I did." And so the purpose of Motlin, again, was in response to this trend of, frankly, egregious records on the part of district courts. But it was not to establish a checklist that judges need to pedantically check off. Rather, it was to admonish those district court judges that they must consider the evidence before them and articulate their reasoning instead of knee-jerk revoking probation once a violation is established. And here, the record reflects that the district court, far from reflexively revoking probation as soon as a violation was established, carefully considered whether both the departure and the probation revocation were warranted. To the extent that the district court continued the hearing to the following day to have a night and a morning to review the documentation again, to decide what was going to happen, and to slow things down and think about what his decision was going to be. That's a far cry from the reflexive revocation of probation that the Motlin court was concerned about. And so the state's position with regard to that third Austin factor is that the district court made findings on all three Austin factors and that he did so within the spirit of Motlin. Turning to the question of whether or not the district court abused its discretion in revoking probation, a district court has broad discretion and should be reversed only with clear abuse of that discretion. The defense argument boils down to further articulation of their position that the district court failed to make an adequate record on the third Austin factor. However, a review of this case's history shows more than adequate grounds to revoke probation. The appellant was sentenced in 2012 on a dispositional departure to a serious criminal sexual conduct offense. He received a year at NERC and 10 years probation. On August 20th of 2014, the appellant received a violation of probation for continuing to use alcohol, being terminated from sex offender treatment, and failing to be cooperative and truthful with probation. As I previously stated, he admitted and probation was not revoked on this file, but other serious felony matters probation was revoked on, and he was committed to the Commissioner of Corrections for a duration of 60 months. Upon being conditionally released from the Commissioner of Corrections, he had several parole violations, several supervised release violations, before he was ultimately returned to Arrowhead Regional Corrections Monitoring. On May 21st, 2020, a second violation of probation was filed. Most of the violations were closely intertwined with the new charge of felon in possession and reckless discharge of a firearm. But there was also failing to report, failure to be truthful with probation, failure to comply with the Rule 25, continued alcohol use. Appellant was placed in the custody of Northeast Regional Correction Center while this matter was pending. And there he continued to violate probation, being found with hooch in his cell at NERC. And so this is a case where appellant has had extensive violations throughout the duration of his time on probation. He has already had the intermediate consequence of a commitment to the Commissioner of Corrections and incarceration at NERC during the pendency of this violation. And he has continued to violate his probation up to and including his incarceration at NERC during the pendency of this matter. That is a more than sufficient record to revoke his probation. Finally, should this court determine the record is inadequate, the proper remedy is remand to the district court for further findings. If the panel has no questions for me, I would yield the remainder of my time.
It appears there are none. Thank you. Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you. So I want to start out by clarifying one thing that I'm sure this court has already figured out. And that is that opposing counsel and I refer to these Austin sub-factors different ways. I refer to them as the Austin endorsed sub-factors. Opposing counsel refers to them as the Motlin factors. I'm not going to say either one of those is right or incorrect. Case law uses them interchangeably. Some cases refer to them as the sub-factors. Some refer to them as the Motlin factors. But we are talking about the same thing. I agree with opposing counsel that State v. Thiel was worse. In State v. Thiel, the court's analysis was, or the court had less analysis. The court failed to make a finding on the second Austin factor. The court failed to make a finding on the third Austin factor. I don't dispute that. But Motlin's analysis of the sufficient evidence exception and its application in cases like Thiel, Motlin said that the role of this court, the role of a reviewing court, is to, the role of an appellate court is not to scour the record to see if there is sufficient evidence. And that's why Motland abrogated Thiel, abrogated the other cases applying that exception. Any way you slice it, what opposing counsel is asking this court to do is to scour the record, to look at the violations, to look at Mr. Craven's record on probation, and determine that one of these three sub-factors are satisfied. These sub-factors were not discussed at the hearings. The sub-factors were not found by the district court. And because of that, this court should remand for findings consistent with Austin. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Thank you to both counsel and for your briefing today, oral argument and briefing. We appreciate it. It does help us in making our decision. The matter is submitted and under advisement, we'll issue our opinion within the statutory period. Thank you both. Have a great day.